We are recording, Mr. Chairman. Meeting is yours.
Okay, so we'll go ahead and call the meeting of the Self-Insured Health Benefits Board of Trustees to order. And let's see, do we need a roll call?
Yes, I'll call the roll.
Okay.
Jeff Yates?
Here.
Monica Dubnik?
Here.
Matt Nelson?
Here.
Anna Maiden?
Here.
Lydia Aranda? Lydia, I think you were on mute.
Here, how's that?
Thank you.
Thank you.
You bet.
All five are present, Mr. Chairman.
Perfect. So first up, we have our consent agenda. Do I hear a motion on the consent agenda?
This is Matt, so moved.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
Thank you. Do we need a roll call vote or can we do a voice vote, Art?
I need a roll call.
Okay, go ahead.
I need to ask, who seconded that? I'm sorry.
Anna Maiden.
Okay, thank you. Jeff?
Aye.
Monica?
Aye.
Anna?
Aye.
Matt?
Aye.
Lydia?
Aye.
Motion passes 5-0.
Okay, thank you. We'll move on to administrative discussions. So I'll turn it over to you, Art, for item one under C.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The first item on the agenda here is going to be a presentation on the financial, the fiscal year ending June 30, 2021 financials. I'll let you know that the overall theme is good news. As Mike and Mark will report, the plan realized the $4.2 million positive outcome for the year, which is good news. I still think, and Mike will elaborate on this, but the overall good news is that I think COVID continues to have a somewhat of a positive impact on our plan. I think people are still, holding off on elective surgeries and that kind of those kind of procedures. And the cost of the plan from COVID is somewhat muted, I think, at fiscal year end. So included in your packet materials was a report that Siegel provides, and I'm gonna turn it over to Mark and Mike to walk you through that. But it was overall good result, good year end numbers for the second consecutive year. So we're doing some positive things. Mark, Mike.
Hi, this is just as an introduction. My name is Mark Fitch. I'm a senior benefits consultant with Siegel, and I'm happy to be joining you today. While you'll hear me talk a little bit more on another topic, I'm going to let Mike McDeese, who's a vice president and health consultant, review these results for your most recently completed fiscal year.
So is there going to be a presentation put up for?
Art, you're on mute.
Darn mute button. Yeah, let me share my screen here. Mike, you want me to start right here?
Yeah, you know what? We can start just on the index, just to let let the trustees know that there are certain reports that we do provide monthly to the city. And some of those are just that, because they have sensitive information in them, are not included in the report that we're presenting to you today. So we've taken a couple of these things out but do know that they're being reported, and Art and his team are definitely on top of the information that we provide through those specific reports. Okay, we can start on the next page, please. So on this specific page on here, we really put together kind of a snapshot of what's going on with the plan, and we compare that back to the prior plan as well. So we look at a number of different financial metrics. And so when we start up in the upper left-hand corner, we're purely just looking at the actual contributions that come into the plan and then the various expenses and offsets against the plan. So when I say contributions, I mean these are the deductions that come out of employees' paychecks plus what the city contributes. So if we go to like that middle column in there where it has basically the plan year through June 2021, you can see of almost $64 million as contributions into the plan. And then we have medical claims of roughly $44.5 million and prescription drug claims of $15.1 million. And then the plan does have stop loss. It's a $325,000 deductible. So most people on here, you can think about this as kind of a reinsurance arrangement that the city has with Cigna. And so any claims for claimants above $325,000, Cigna will take that liability and they reverse, they pay back to the plan that amount. So that was $3.5 million. And then down below that, the city also does participate in prescription drug rebates, also with Cigna. And for the period, there was roughly about $2.7 million of rebates that came back to the plan. And then below that is the stop loss premiums and the various expenses that get charged off to the plan, which are roughly about $6.2 million. And so that makes the total paid claim cost plus expenses roughly about $60 million. And that shows a surplus before incurred but not reported adjustments for reserves of roughly about $4.3 million. So that basically says for every dollar that came into the plan, 93.3 cents of the dollar was used to pay for benefits for that period of time. To the right of that, we show you what things look like for the prior plan year, which was actually the first year. So you kind of get a sense of how those two plan years compare. Down below that, we have the enrollments by period. And I guess, well, I shouldn't say by period. We tried to go back and look at things on a 12-month basis. So these are a little bit different time periods down here for these metrics. And it's because we actually use an incurred period with 2 months of runoff. But it gives you the best idea of how underlying costs are changing between the plan years, basically, or the periods. And you can see the number of subscribers, which are really employees or retirees, actually was down about 3.6% period over period. And the same for members, which you can think about those as just belly buttons. So this includes all dependents, spouses, kids. That also declined about 3.3%. I won't really go through all the detail with the different age categories on there. There's really nothing real significant that really stands out there. If we go to the very bottom, you can look at member cost share. So this looks at what the member pays relative to what the plan pays when you look at your deductible and other co-pays and out-of-pocket expenses. And you can see when we look at medical and pharmacy, that totals up to about 7.5%. And that's lower than the year before. There are certainly things that impact why that goes down. One of them is simply that there's co-pay leveraging every year. Which means when the city doesn't change plan design, some of the costs actually get a greater amount of costs get absorbed by the city. When we go up to the upper right-hand corner, which is looking at inpatient facility, we look at a number of different metrics there. The first one being the admits per 1,000, and you can see it's a pretty good size reduction.
Hey, Mike,
and, yes.
Can I ask you a quick question?
Yeah.
On the contributions, I'm sorry, go back to the very first block you have there.
Mm-hmm.
The contributions, is that assume that you'll get everything that the fund is supposed to get through the end of the year, or was that a snapshot in time?
It's basically taken your contribution rates times what Cigna says is in their eligibility system for every month. So it's a theoretical number. You could obviously put more or less if the city decided to do that, but this says if you were to put everything in that you say you were going to put in, that should be what the contribution number looks like. So good question. Good question.
All right. I just want to be sure that we're fully reflecting, because the city forces at least the city side payment, even though positions are vacant. So I want to be sure that's reflected.
Yeah, the number is basically whatever Cigna reports. So you send them an eligibility tape, I think it's maybe twice a week. So this reflects what you're submitting on that tape times whatever the contribution rates that have been established for the plan for that period.
Actually, question for you continuing on Jeff's question. So Cigna is promulgating these rates. Is that based on funding through the ag corridor, or is that based on funding at expected? And if it's at expected, what's the ag corridor that we have hanging over as a liability?
So good question, Matt. This is based off of expected. So the contribution rates were established off of expected. There is a 25% aggregate corridor. You know, for clients that are, you know, this big, typically you're never going to see somebody hit 25% variance. I think, you know, the city has that in there just because they're pretty new to self-funding and they wanted to establish some reserves before they look at, you know, the potential to remove that.
Okay. Thanks, Mike.
You're welcome. Okay. Probably the next thing on here, we'll just talk a little bit about the large claims. So we track the claims that are greater than 100,000. And so again, we're looking at two periods of time. It was actually pretty stable with the number of counts. You're looking at 74 individuals versus 76 for the prior period. What you all notice is that the average cost of each claim went up pretty significantly in the current period. So roughly about a 15.5% increase, which just, you know, can simply mean the severity of claims really got worse in the period. And you can see total paid. So there's roughly about $16.8 million paid for just 74 individuals on the plan. And that roughly represents about 26.6% of all the claims paid by the plan. So it's a pretty substantial amount what large claims really do end up representing. Down below that, we look at in-network usage and discounts. You know, it's pretty high for this plan, mostly because 60% of the population's in it's a network, it's called a network plan. It's really an HMO type plan. It's a closed network. So we would expect these figures to be pretty high as far as looking at where people are going to seek care. And then the discounts on here, 64.8%. And say that's probably middle of the pack for what we see for the Tucson area. So it's good. No complaints there. Down below that, we break out the prescription drugs by the basically three categories: generics, brand preferred, and brand non-preferred. And these are just the plan paid amounts and not really adjusted in any kind, but you can see that the total cost of drugs went up roughly about 5.9% that period over period. When we look down below that, we start to look at the scripts, you know, where are scripts coming from. So this is per member per year. You can see that most of the scripts are issued for retail 30. And then, you know, the number of total scripts, 9.6 scripts per member per year versus the prior period of 10.1 scripts. So not unusual at by any stretch there. And then down below that, we also look at just some other pharmacy metrics. We look at the generic dispensing rate, which is 92.5, which is really a really excellent number. Anything 90 and above is really pretty good. What's unusual down below that is typically we see the percentage changes usually higher with the brand non-preferred and or the brand preferred, and both of those actually had reductions, but what went up was the generics, and that went up pretty significantly, even though they're much smaller dollars per script. There's just a lot more scripts for generics. Okay, next page, please, Art. So on this particular slide on here, we provide the detail for what happened each and every month during the plan year. And then in the dark blue shade below, we actually compare that back to the prior period, so you get a really kind of a sense of what's going on with the plan. I'll just start down in the teal section for looking at totals. And these, again, are going to tie back to what you saw on the very first exhibit back on the dashboard. But looking at contributions, again, of $63.9 million. We break the claims out in here between a couple of different buckets. For medical. So FFS is simply just means fee for service. So these are discounted claims if somebody went in network, and then just simply the non-capitated claims if somebody goes out of network. And then you'll notice in the capitation column. So capitation means it's just Cigna has arrangements with providers where they're basically paid a fixed fee regardless of how many times city employees or members use those specific providers. And it's pretty high for the type of plan that the city has. And that's mostly tied really back to the network plan that's offered, which is, again, like an HMO lookalike type plan. And you can see that for capitation, that was $4.8 million for the period. And again, we already talked about the stop loss refunds of $3.5 million that came back to the city and prescription drug total claims of $15.2 million. And then the pharmacy rebates, there were two rebates that were paid during the period. That first one was pretty large, but that was actually more of an annual amount. And then going forward, that's now been changed to where it's actually a quarterly amount going forward. And then we have the plan expenses in here, which include some city allocation of expenses. Most of it belongs, it's the Cigna expenses for administering the plan, and then the stop loss premiums are in that particular bucket. And so again, we look at, this is how you got to the roughly $3 million of surplus that we showed on the prior page. Okay, next slide, Art. So this plan on here focuses just on the network plan option. And you can see there's roughly about 3,000 employees or retirees participating in this plan, and roughly about, let's call it 7,700 members. So really about 60% of the plan participation is in this particular plan. And again, we have things, if we go down to the teal section for the totals, you've got, you know, $49.6 million in contributions. And if we go across, you know, you've got net medical claims of $32.4 million. You've got pharmacy claims of $12.6 million. The bulk of the prescription drug rebates in here belong with this plan of $2.2 million. Same with the expenses, mostly belong to this plan, $4.2 million. So bottom line is this plan is the one that really kind of drives a fair amount of the cost, kind of how this plan runs determines really mostly how the entire plan seems to run. But it does have a surplus on this one of $2.5 million, and roughly about 95 cents of every dollar is used to pay for benefits. Okay, next slide, please. So the next slide on here is for the high deductible plan with a qualified HSA. And that particular plan has roughly about 706 employees participating, and roughly about 1,573 members on it. And again, when we look kind of across to see how this particular plan ran, you can see there's roughly 7.7 million of contributions. And if we just go all the way across to the third column from the right and look at total costs, you can see it's really substantially below the contributions that come in for this plan. So roughly about $2.1 million of excess, or roughly 72 cents of every dollar goes to pay for benefits. So, you know, you're going to notice that each of these three plans tends to run a little bit differently. When we go to the next slide, you'll be able to see that this is the HRA plan. And so this has really kind of the same plan design really as the HSA, except the only difference really is that the prescription drugs on this one is a copay plan, whereas on the previous slide, the prescription drugs are subject to the deductible on the plan. And so when you look at this one, you can see really a much different story when you look at, you know, I'm going to say roughly the same amount of participation. It's a little bit less than the HSA plan, but roughly about 6.6 million of contributions coming in. And then when we look all the way over to the total cost, then it really goes up quite a bit, 7.1 million of total cost. And for that, this plan, there's actually a deficit and roughly about $1.06 for every dollar that comes into the plan. Now, the thing about the HRA plan is that this is where a fair amount of the retirees are covered. And these are non-Medicare, mostly non-Medicare retirees. So we typically know when you see early retirees on a plan, they tend to have a lot higher cost than an equivalent active employee. Okay, next slide, Art. We also take a look at splitting out the cost by active employees. We've added some COBRA folks in here too, but basically active employees. And then the next slide is retirees, just to get a sense of, you know, which parts of the plan participation are the ones that either make the cost better or make the cost worse. And you can see here the vast majority of the participants covered in the plan actually belong in this active plan, so employees and their dependents. And when we go down to the teal total section down there for 2021, you can see there's roughly about 53 million of contributions. And when we go all the way over to that third column from the right, the total cost is 44.5 million. So this obviously generates a fair amount of surplus, roughly 8.5 million of surplus. And, you know, that's a great thing, because when we look at the next slide, you're going to see really a different story. So these are the retirees. So there's about 906 covered under the plan as of June. And when we look at those contributions, that's 10.87 million. And then we go all the way over to the total cost column three from the right, you can see that the total cost is 15.1 million. So they run significantly worse than the contributions that come in for this class of covered persons. So that generates roughly about a 4.3 $3 million deficit. So we already know that there's some subsidies that happen. If you look at just those two slides, you know that there is an implicit subsidy that happens for retirees under this arrangement. Okay, next slide, please. So the next slide just really kind of gives you a little bit more of the detail about where the enrollment shakes out and then how that compares to the prior year. And we really just kind of break this out by plan. And then we really kind of look at basically single versus somebody who has a dependent. And what's kind of notable out of this, I think, is that if you go down and look at the very last row and you're looking at the changes of enrollment, we can clearly see if you look at the network plan and look at the total that there's been a reduction in participants covered year over year. So roughly about a 5.8% reduction for the network plan. Now the HSA plan has an increase, roughly 2.2. So it's not that members totally abandoned the plan. Some actually went over to the HSA. And then we look at the HRA, and that's down 2.7%. So again, another reduction. But when you look at the two columns to the right, you can see when we look at the employee column, the actives, you can see that was down about 3.3. Really where the vast majority of the reduction comes from is retirees. So the plan is shedding off some retirees when we look at period over period. Okay, next slide, please. The next slide on here just breaks out the expense detail. So there's really just a couple of different categories that we capture with this. The first four on here really are the Cigna expenses. So the first one is the medical administration. So this is just the ASO fees to administer the plan that Cigna charges. And so you can see if you go down to the teal total section for the plan year, that was roughly about $1.46 million. In the column next to that, we have the individual stop-loss premiums. And for the same period, that's roughly about $2.8 million. And then again, we do have aggregate stop-loss on here because there's really not significant risk to Cigna on there. They really don't charge a huge amount of money for that particular benefit, so that's $123,000 for the stop loss, aggregate stop loss. And then in the column next to that, we have what we call non-claim medical expenses. So these are charges that go through the bank account, the self-funded bank account, that are basically non-claim expenses. So these can be a variety of different things, but they are Cigna charges for the most part that come through that. And you can see that was about $807,000 for the period. And then the last column on there is the city-specific expenses. So this number is just an allocated amount every month. And at the beginning of every year, ART gives us a number to work with that we'll just plug that in there as kind of the same expense monthly. And then, you know, there's no real, we don't really have a true up yet mechanism for the end of the year, but my understanding is these are pretty close to the reality. But this gives you a good idea of what the non-claim expenses are relative to the plan for the year. Okay, next slide, please. Now this particular slide on here, normally all this information again would be, it's filled in when we send this to ART, but because again of the nature of the information on there, we've redacted pretty much the first four columns on here, but we did want you to see over to the far right, each one of these amounts in here represents an individual claimant that's on the plan and how much the plan has paid for each one of those individuals. I shouldn't say the plan paid. I mean, it's the total amount paid for that person, but again, their stop loss anything above $325,000 for each of these individuals gets reimbursed by Cigna back to the city. So you can see we tracked all the way down. I think these are all claims greater than $150,000. So you've roughly got about 39 people that had claims paid in that period of time that were greater than that threshold of $150,000. Okay, next slide, please. I really won't spend too much time on this slide, but you know, the city's been, for this particular report, the city was had been self-funded just really for two plan years. And so this particular slide just included some runouts. We could really kind of get more of a picture of what things look like on what we'll call a more mature basis. So you'll notice on here, I think it's the fifth column from the right, we have something that says it's MP runouts. So that was minimum premium runouts that fell under the Cigna plan. So these aren't the liability of the city. They're the liability of Cigna when it was an insured plan. But we knew these were being paid during that period. And so to get more of a kind of a realistic look at what actual costs were, we did include that in here. But again, these aren't the city's liability. These are more of if you're trying to really look at costs and what the true cost of something is, and we put those in there. Okay, next slide, please. And so this last slide on here really just kind of focuses on the fact that the city does contribute money towards an HSA and an HRA. So anybody who's enrolled in those plans receives money. If you're in the HSA plan, once the city provides that money over to employees, it's actually employees' money. In the HRA plan, it's more of a notional account where the monies do carry over from period to period, but if somebody either retires off of the plan or an employee quits, they actually forfeit any unused balance. And so we actually keep track, or actually Cigna is good about keeping track on here of what the fund balance really kind of looks like at any point in time. And so, you know, carryover just simply means this is the amount from the prior plan year that was carried over. And then general, or just I believe new amounts that get added in the current period. And so we get a running total of really kind of what the fund balance liability looks like. And when you go to like June of 2021 on there, you can see that's roughly about $1.6 million. Now, we don't reflect these in any of our contribution rates that we set up for the city from year to year. These are funded from a different pool. So the contribution rates aren't established to include these in there. Okay. I think that was everything, Art, I had for that presentation. Does anybody have any questions for me? Hopefully I didn't go too fast or too slow or was totally so boring that nobody even listened.
No, it was great. I appreciate all that. This is Lydia, and especially some of the information that you detailed out in that chart of the claims over 150,000 and things like that. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, do we have any other questions for Mike? All right, hearing none, we'll move on to item two, the 22 year-to-date financial update.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'm gonna ask a quick question here. Lydia, I know you said you had to leave about 30 or 45 minutes in. This might be a good point, if they're a good place if you need to hop.
Okay, I'm flexible for like 10 more minutes, but so I can either duck off now or I could stay and then quietly exit, you know, at my
your
time.
Call.
Great, I'll listen for a little bit more. And apologies to everyone that I had an overlapping meeting, but I'll follow up.
Very good. Yeah, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, this next item is really going to be a brief item. It's an update on where we're at year to date in the new plan year, which started on July 1. There's Siegel only has really 1 month of data as they're working on the August report right now. So I'm gonna turn it back over to Mike to let him know. I do want to point out one significant change from the prior plan year, and that is the stop loss. The amount, the stop loss premiums increased pretty substantially from last year's plan year to this year's plan year. And we did go out and do an extensive RFP for those services. As Mike noted and you saw in his report, the reason for that substantially is because we have a few large claimants that are driving the cost for our stop loss premiums. We went to RFP, did the best that we could. But I think they went up, Mark, Mike, I think the number was probably about $2.5 to $2.8 million on a per annum basis, which is a significant increase. And you'll see that in the numbers that Mike goes through for his July report. But despite that, I think that the plan is off to a good start in this fiscal year, despite the increase in cost. I do also want to note that when we got the rates adopted by the board in March, we obviously did not have that information from the stop loss premium increase. And so that increase in rates was not able to be absorbed through the rate process, which may leave us at the end of this fiscal year. It may impact the surplus deficit that we see at the end of the fiscal year because we're not absorbing that rate increase premium through our rate structure. So I wanted to make sure that the board was aware of that. And I'll let Mike talk through the report here for July. Let me share my screen.
And I'll probably just talk to that dashboard and just really kind of the part that looks at the upper left-hand corner with the financials. But Art's right. We set the contribution rates pretty early for the city. And, we did our best estimate at the time of what we thought stop-loss premiums would change by. And we did go through a really extensive RFP after the contribution rates really were set up and established, and found out that the cost was really going to be significantly higher. So for that same $325,000 individual stop loss deductible, the cost went up roughly about 68%. So it was really significant. In a typical year, you might, expect 10 to 15% increases in stop loss premium. So that tells you it was pretty severe. Again, we went to the market and there were, I know we'll talk a little bit later on about the stop loss RFP, but there were a number of bidders, Cigna included, and we ended up staying with Cigna. We didn't change the deductible level. We did look at two other deductible levels, but the cities kind of got their preferred risk tolerance, and at the time the feeling was that they didn't want to take on a little bit greater exposure by going with the higher deductible levels, even though that would reduce some of the premium rates down for that. But if we really, I'm really going to just focus on the left-hand column in the upper left-hand box up there. So that really, we just again have 1 month of data, and again we take the I'm going to call them the theoretical contributions, Jeff. But this is really just the enrollment for July multiplied by the established contribution rate. So that's roughly about 5.4 million. And then we can look at the medical claims are roughly about 4 million, pharmacy claims about 1.2 million, Now, the stop-loss refunds that show up here, the $198,000, this is really just some carryover reimbursements from the prior plan year. But you can see that that comes out to be roughly about $5 million of claim cost. And then when we go down and look at the stop-loss and the expenses on there, you can see that's $613,000. And if you just look at the far right, looking at the same month, you know, for July of 20, that's roughly about $100,000 higher just in that 1 month comparison. But you can see the total claims and expenses were roughly $5.7 million. So that leaves a slight deficit of $274,000 for the month. And again, the vast majority of that really is because we just didn't price in a 68% increase with the stop loss premiums. But you do get a pretty good sense when you look at the PM cost. So this is a per employee per month cost, $1,281 for July of this year. And we compare back to July of the prior plan year, that was $1,236. So not hugely different, roughly about 4%. But again, we're only talking about really 1 month here, and you've got 11 other months that really will determine the year. So I think that was the only thing I really wanted to say about the current year report. Unless you guys want me to go on with more detail.
No, Mike, and I'm going to pause there. The only thing that I'd like to add there is that we did, during the conversations about the stop loss, we did have a conversation about aggregate and whether or not we wanted to have continue to add the aggregate stop loss. But my general feeling on the plan is that until we're more established and a more mature plan, my risk tolerance is generally you know, fairly low. So I don't, you know, I think it's good for the plan to have the stop loss at our current levels as well as aggregate. Moving into year 3 and 4 or 5 of the plan, you know, those levels are something that we'll definitely take a look at on an annual basis, especially the aggregate stop loss. I didn't feel like $123,000 in premium was worth the risk of not having that aggregate stop loss there on the tail end, even through that corridor. But it was analyzed and it was looked at, and I wanted to make sure that the board understood that and was briefed on that. So, Mike, I'll turn it back over to you.
Mike, with respect to the ISL policy that the RFP was conducted on, was that conducted basically just on a no lasers provision, or was that an option? And after balancing it out, I mean, I'm looking at using a $300,000 deductible, about $3.7 million of high-cost claimants above that threshold. So I guess, was that something that was looked at and modeled, or was the expectation based on risk tolerance just to run it on a no lasers contract?
So we had two bidders that actually proposed lasers. They did not really offer a premium-only option. Cigna gave us the option for both, and we did really kind of evaluate. We did evaluate both, and the city felt like they wanted to continue with the premium arrangement instead of the options with the lasers on it. So for the rest of the folks, you know, lasers means that there are certain known high cost claimants that are expected to have materially high claims above the stop loss deductible. And so Cigna and the other bidders said, well, you know, if you want those persons covered, we're going to require a much higher deductible of those individuals. And I can tell you some were as high as 700,000. I think there were a couple that were 1.2 million. Mm-hmm. So basically the city was self-funding all of the cost of some of these high claimants, the expected cost of what those high claimants might be. So in the end, when we evaluated everything, Matt, the committee decided that they'd rather have the known expense of the premiums rather than take potential under the lasers.
Okay. And then one other question for you on the high cost claimants, again, because we're looking at about $3.7 million in total high cost claimant spend that's net of a $300,000 deductible. What portion of that is, you know, ongoing recurring versus catastrophic one-time expense? Do you have an approximate feel? I know it's not something you'd expect to know every claim off the top of your head, but.
Yeah, there was at least three or four that are going to be, they're going to be up there and probably in the $1 million range. So there definitely are recurring ones. I mean, there can be one-time catastrophic ones. Oftentimes, you know, they're still, somebody doesn't just automatically have a $1 million claim 1 year and be cured the next year. It's typically more than a year's worth of costs that you'll end up seeing for a lot of them. But there definitely are known ongoing ones that are going to be really high cost.
Okay. And I guess in a similar line, when we look at pharmacy versus medical, I mean, do you have a feel for an approximate breakdown? How much of the, you know, like let's say we've got our top three claimants, right? One that's at about 970,000, another one's at 975, and another one that's at 1.5 million. Do we have an approximate, you know, or at least a vision for what portion of that is recurring pharmacy versus medical?
I know we get that. I want to say, I'm going to tell you, say maybe 95% of the cost is under the medical. A lot of it is not pharmacy.
Gotcha. Okay.
Okay, are there any other questions? Hearing none, let's move on to item three.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, this item I intended to bring in June. And really, this is an overview of the city's RFP process that we undertook for our medical, pharmacy, dental, EAP, and wellness programs. And I might be missing one in there. And I'm going to turn it over to Mark here in a minute, but I wanted to sort of, the context for this item is really to give the board an idea of the process that the city goes through in our RFP process to thoroughly vet and evaluate our programs in their entirety. This was one of the most complex RFPs that I personally have ever sat on, and I think Jose and Anita, who are also a part of that process, can probably attest to, and Jeff Yates probably can too. It was one of the more complex RFPs that I've ever done, and I've been with the city for 9 years. And we decided to break it out. So when we sent out the solicitation to all interested parties, we set it up such that we could award by chapter. So the medical had its own chapter, the pharmacy had its own chapter, dental had its own, and this would allow the committee to evaluate on the basis of the response and the evaluation criteria that was established within the RFP, what vendors were best suited to provide the services to the city in the manner in which they were currently being provided. So it gave the committee flexibility around our vendor setup and the provision of services within that vendor space. So for example, if we felt like there was a specific vendor that excelled in medical but not necessarily in dental, we could award different categories to different vendors based on their method of approach and their scoring and what they're proposing during the RFP process. The process really, and I'm going to fumble the date, so bear with me, because we did it, feels like 18 months ago, but I know it wasn't that long. I think we started the process somewhere in August, and we didn't wrap up award of the RFP until March or April of, was it earlier this year? I believe it was.
Yeah. Yep.
So We generally have a three-person committee for our RFPs in the city. On this particular one, because of the size and the complexity, we had a five-member scoring evaluation committee. And it was a cross-functional team of individuals throughout the city. But really, before I turn it over to Mark, I wanted to give you that context, and I wanted to have the committee understand that there is a very thorough, very thoughtful process that goes into selecting these vendors, and we went into it with the understanding that we could have changed the look of our program depending on the responses that we received, because before the RFP everything was bundled with Cigna, and we wanted to have the ability, if it didn't make financial sense for the city to continue in that arrangement, the ability to expand out from that and unbundle, so to speak. And that obviously didn't happen with the way that the responses came in and the services that were being evaluated were considered. So wanted to just give the board that awareness. And I'll pause there and ask if there's any questions of me before I turn it over to Mark in his presentation. And I'll invite Jeff and Anita and Jose to comment on anything that I may have missed there.
I don't have anything I'd like to add. It just was a long process.
All right, Mark, I think you're up. I'm pulling it up on my end, unless you want to share it on your screen.
If you don't mind, that would be great. Mr. Chairman, trustees and professionals, we'll take a look at this, and hopefully I'll be able to compress the description of this process in a much shorter time frame than it actually took. And I do have those dates, Art, so I can confirm that it did begin in August and end April of the following year, well, almost April. Actually, it took a little longer for the stop loss. So this process, And it's really the process what I want to focus on today. It was a joint effort between the city's benefit staff, the city's procurement staff, and Siegel. And this is a large project, and this RFP included five lines of coverage. Okay, it included medical, which within medical you had telehealth, HSA and HRA, as well as network and administration. You had pharmacy as a separate line of coverage, your employee assistance program, or EAP, as well as your wellness program and dental. Plus, we added on, or we included stop-loss insurance, which was kind of separate, and we knew that would come in later because, in general, stop-loss insurers won't give you final rates until much, much closer to your implementation date of July 1st, 2021. So once again, we released the RFP on August 1st of 2020. Vendors had a month to respond. They responded on September 1st, and then beginning in October, and in November, December, and then into 2021, the committee digested all of the responses independently and then met to discuss and provide their scoring. Final award for the five lines of coverage happened in mid-April, and the stop-loss award happened mid-June. So if I can turn to the first bucket, which is the medical, there were all four major networks did respond. The RFP was sent to other third-party administrators, and they declined to submit proposals based on their understanding of what was asked for. So on the next page, we talk about, or Art mentioned, you know, the committee reviewing and scoring based on evaluation criteria. And these are the high-level evaluation criteria, right? So the who, the how much, and the why. So under number A, you've got network and provider access, and this includes information that was obtained regarding the size of the proposed network, in the local area. Also, how many currently used providers, how many city employees and the providers they were actually using were in a proposed network? And then also, does that proposed network provide good access to providers based on where city employees live? So that's, you know, who, that's the who that we're trying to answer. The method approach, item number B, that's the how. So how does each network, each proposed medical network provide customer service? What's their service model? How do they administer the benefit design? Can they administer the benefit design? What are their reporting capabilities? Those types of questions, the how. How are they going to provide service? Of course, C is what's the price? What's the cost? What are the discounts off of services? What's that dollar impact? And then item D, what are the qualifications and experience? Does your network have any similar clients, similar to the city? What types of financial ratings you have? Who are your references? So you take all of those different buckets and you score those and you weight them, and then you come up with a winner for that category. And before I turn it over to Amy Jimenez, who is a pharmacy consultant with Siegel, and she really understands pharmacy much, much more than either Mike or I, any questions on that basic evaluation criteria? And for as complex as this RFP was, and for those on the committee, you can vouch for that, I kind of simplified it, but in some ways, it makes it a little easier to digest if it's simplified. So if there are no questions so far, I'll just turn it over to Amy. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you, Mark. If we could scroll to the next slide. Fantastic. Thank you. So similar to medical, we put out a solicitation. It was all part of the same solicitation for pharmacy benefit management services. You might hear that referred to as PBM. And we did receive seven solicitors, people who were willing to bid or wanted to bid on this piece of business. So we had some standalone PBMs. You can see here they're labeled there as PBM. And we also had some bidders that bid with their PBM integrated within a medical offer. So we had different types of offers, but we were able to just evaluate the PBM or the pharmacy piece on its own. If you scroll to the next slide, please, we can cover what some of the proposal and evaluation criteria were. Somewhat similar to medical in that we're broken into very similar buckets here. Method of approach. So what's the types of things included in the method of approach were going to be things like the network. So in specifically the retail network. So what retail pharmacies are your members currently using, and what retail pharmacies would be available in each of those seven bidders networks? We wanted to make sure that members would have the least amount of disruption. And if anybody was going to be disrupted because a pharmacy wasn't going to be in the network, what was that pharmacy and how many people are using it? So we looked at that kind of information. Another thing in the method of approach would be asking for each of the bidders to provide a formulary disruption analysis. So what a formulary is a list of medications that members have access to. Under each of those seven bidders would have a formulary, which is a list of medications you have access to. So that would include generics, preferred brands, and non-preferred brands. There may be things that were excluded from a formulary. So if something was going to be excluded, we needed to know what medications would be excluded, how many members are currently using those medications, because that would, again, give us an idea of the type of member disruption that may occur with each one of the different bidders. So that's a piece of information that would have been requested and evaluated. Another thing under method of approach would have perhaps been what mail order facility is your particular PBM have a mail order facility that goes along with them, and some statistics around the mail order facility. How quickly do they fill prescriptions, things of that nature. So those are the types of questions we were asking and seeking answers to in the method of approach. Under qualifications and experience, that was more specific to the actual bidders themselves. So questions such as, what states are you licensed to perform PBM services within? Is your company currently under any sort of lawsuits or involved in any sort of lawsuits? What's your financial ratings from some of the major rating agencies? So those were questions that were more specific to the bidders themselves, and making sure that they met some basic qualifications and experience. And then the third piece of it would have been, of course, similar to medical pricing submissions. So we would gather all the different pieces related to PBM pricing from each of the bidders and make sure that we properly evaluated the pricing that was being proposed. So we were able to compare all seven side by side using your claims data, your members' claims data, and applying the different pricing that came in from each of the bidders to be able to kind of put them side by side and do a comparison between each of the bidders what the pricing would look like. And again, that was a quick high-level summary of pharmacy. Obviously, it took us months to do all of this. But are there any questions related to pharmacy and what we looked at or how we evaluated the information that came in?
Yeah, question for you. On the PBM RFP, were these all conducted on a traditional basis, or was pass-through an option? Was there a pass-through option vetted?
They were all traditional.
Okay.
All of them. Mm-hmm.
Any particular reason why we didn't explore a pass-through option?
I'd have to go back and see if that was a requirement of the cities. It would not have been a requirement of ours. We may have opened it up and allowed people to bid either, but I don't think we did. I think we specifically requested traditional.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, because they all bid traditional. I think that was at the request.
I think the thinking around that was more around not wanting to drastically change the structure and the cost structure for the employees. Right. So I think that's why we went that route.
And if I may, Mr. Chairman, what I can speak to is, when we set out the RFP, we asked prospective bidders to bid exactly as the services were being provided today, so we could get an apples to apples comparison of you know, how we were doing things today. And we asked for anyone or any particular vendor that was going to propose something different, that they specifically spell that out in the method of approach, and the committee could evaluate it as such, if I recall correctly. But I did want to interject that, and I know, Matt, you've had for a few months now, you've had some you've wanted a sort of a little bit of a deeper dive in pharmacy, and I don't know whether, you know, I want to keep it high level, but I'm not sure if we can address some of your questions in the context of the RFP here today. But again, I want to make sure that we're keeping a high level and pertinent to the conversation.
Certainly. Yeah. And I mean, quite frankly, if the bid was conducted with all things traditional, then, you know, so be it. It is what it is, kind of a situation. If there was a pass-through option, it definitely would have been interesting to compare the two of them. Really, from a consulting perspective, and this is more of kind of, I think, a general Siegel question than anything else, but is there anything that we need to be concerned about looking to 2022 and CAA requirements, Consolidated Appropriations Act requirements, with these assets being run on a traditional PBM basis, where there's really no visibility as to how the plan assets are being determined, you know, once you get into the rebate tiers and things like that? Is there anything that we should be concerned about, regardless of structure, or do you feel that we're in a good position?
Amy, can you speak to that specific to the pharmacy industry? Because, Matt, that was your question, right? Specific to the pharmacy?
Correct. Yes, exactly. Since we can't really see the machinations that are going on behind the scenes of the PBM, right? We've got a guaranteed rebate level, we've got a guaranteed AWP pricing level, but beyond that level of, all right, we're going to hit these numbers, we have no idea what's going on with the assets behind the scenes. And so is there anything we should be concerned about as a trust under the Consolidated Appropriations Act because we can't see that level of detail? And if it's something that you need to take to another meeting, that's fine. I just want to put it out there as just kind of us identifying if that's something we should have our eyes on or not.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I'll just say we definitely can take that away, Matt. But I think your question is a complicated one because of what that act does and how it does allow all of those costs to be readily accessed from the public. But you're right. One of the components, although that was delayed, so we still have yet to get guidance on what that's going to look like. But the initial approach was looking at cost and not including rebates. So I'm wondering if that's something that they realized maybe they left off the table and they needed to bring it back. Amy,
I was going to say, we know things have been delayed, but we do know that through RFP processes, we're asking and making sure that PBMs are going to be able to handle this, have the machine readable files and things of that nature that are going to be able to be posted or shared or accessed via cloud. They all have a little bit different arrangement for what they're going to offer, but it does appear that all of the PBMs that you would potentially be working with, including Cigna, who you are working with, will be able to meet those requirements as far as what you're going to have to be able to have access to and post. But like Mark said, we do know there's been a delay, and it's probably because I think perhaps people have realized that there's a bit more to it than what they thought. And so they need to push it back a little bit more so that everybody will be able to post or have access to the information that's needed. But we have not heard of there being any problem, whether it's a pass-through or traditional arrangement, with clients being able to access those files that would need to be posted for consumption. But you're right, rebates and things may not be in them, or there may be a delay, so there's a way to include them. But I don't think you'll have any problem meeting that requirement at all with Cigna.
Okay, all right, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks, Amy. Art, if you want to move on to the EAP. We actually had 9 vendors that were evaluated. And once again, this is similar to medical, and without going into a bunch of detail, we still evaluated in the same 4 components, and that's on the next page there. The who, which is who's in your network, and how easy is it to access providers? Is there adequate coverage in the Tucson area and those areas where employees live? How do you provide EAP services? You would think they'd be all the same, and I would agree most of them are, but they're not always. They don't always approach their business in the same way. And then, of course, how much is the EAP program? And then what are the qualifications and experience do you have? And really, I'm oversimplifying, but we do a lot of the same things with these products. And obviously they're in a different business than medical, but really it's just repetition, looking at responses, comparing responses, and the committee had that task to be able to score each of those responses. The next component was wellness. And although there were 6 vendors that responded, this was done after the medical. Once Cigna was selected, there's no reason to look at any of the other integrated wellness, because Blue Cross or UHC or Aetna is not going to bid on a medical plan for a wellness program that's with Cigna. So Cigna and the 2 standalones were evaluated. And once again, very similar criteria, method of approach. You know, how do you perform your wellness program? What do you recommend? What types of activities are recommended? And Art, if you can scroll down to the next page, please. Of course, what is the cost? And then what types of experience do you have with wellness programs? And can you provide any current clients you have that might act as references on your behalf? The last of the five components is dental. And with dental, four vendors were evaluated. And dental, once again, the very first criteria is network and provider access. So that's the who. Very important to look at if networks are adequate, if employees have access to those providers within that network, and then what percentage of providers are employees already using that are in any proposed network. Also, method of approach and how, of course, cost factors in, as well as any qualifications of a proposed dental network. So those were all evaluated. Mike's actually going to just do a high-level review of the summary of the costs once Cigna was selected to provide those five components.
All right, so on this particular slide here, we really just focused on where were we when we started this RFP with Cigna, and then looking at an initial offer, and then we're going to call it clarifications. But it really, most people would think of it as kind of a best and final. But, you know, we looked at each one of these independently. And if you go down kind of to the, I guess it's a lime green color down at the bottom, you can see that we're looking at 3 years of cost data. But you can see where things are standing today, roughly 3 year annualized current costs were roughly about $182 million. And then we had an initial offer from Cigna, which was roughly about a $2 million savings. And then through best and final and clarifications, that number ended up at roughly $3.8 million, with the majority of those savings really kind of coming from pharmacy. With medical, there really isn't, other than ASO fees, there really isn't any other savings to be had. The discounts that Cigna passes through, or just whatever they achieve. So there really is no change if they're not changing networks, which we were not asking for a change in network. But Cigna did throw a couple of enhancements in place, and you can see off to the right on there that there were a couple of things that were added into the contract for the current period. But there is probably the nicest one out of that is just having an on-site behavioral specialist that will be working full-time for the city. So that was a real nice plus. And I know Art and his team are currently working to get that in place. So that was a nice addition. But this kind of describes, at least looking at the non-stop loss parts of the RFPs that were did, just a high level illustration of what the expected savings were going to be. And I know this is pretty thin, it's not a whole lot, but again, we weren't really intending to dive through a lot of details, but just kind of focus more on the bigger picture.
Since you mentioned stop loss, do you want to move on to stop loss, Mike?
Sure. So on the stop loss on here, we had six bidders. I know this was I think Jen sent this out to actually, it probably went out to 12 potential prospects. Now, some of them, that's probably not their, I would say their real focus as much anymore. So one or two of them, we probably knew were not going to propose back. But so there were a number of folks that weren't interested in the risk. And then, of course, we had the six here that were. But we evaluated the current deductible level, which is $325,000. We looked at also increasing that to $350,000 and $375,000 per individual. So we had those various quotes. And again, just, you know, looking at what we got back, we basically only had one quote that was premium only with no laser, and that was one of the Cigna options, and that was the route that the city wanted to take.
Okay. Thank you, Mike. Mr. Chairman, trustees and professionals, any questions about the RFP process?
I have none.
Thank you.
All right, having no questions, we'll move on to item four, the update on the City of Tucson vaccine mandate and plan year transition. Go ahead, Art.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. This is just a really a brief update on some of the things that staff have been working on over the course of the last month to 2 months. The city is planning on transitioning our plan year. We made a big effort to try and transition the plan. We're going to go from, so right now our current plan year is July 1 to June 30, and we are going to move, and I believe it's going to start with 1/1/2023. We're going to transition that plan year from 7/1 to 6/30 to 1/1 to 12/31, and the reasons are twofold. I think this really does help with the budgeting process. In terms of how we budget and when we get budget information to the city manager's office each year, as maybe some of you got a feel for earlier this year, there's a time crunch when between the time that it takes us to put together budget information for the next fiscal year and when decisions need to be made by the city manager and Jeff working closely with the city manager to deliver the budget materials to mayor and council. And it really doesn't leave staff much time from the time that those decisions are made with respect to the budget and final rates to then prepare for open enrollment, which happens a few weeks to a month after the mayor and council adopt the insurance rate. So that's the biggest driver for us to contemplate a plan year transition is it'll alleviate budget constraints that we currently find ourselves in. I think it'll allow us to engage with our plan participants on plan design changes or rate changes that we've contemplated for the last couple of years, and because of the way and the structure that we've lived in, and the timing of decisions have not had an opportunity to be really put before mayor and council. And I think that the plan year transition will allow us to do that. So like I said, we were trying and we were pushing to try and get it in for 1/1/2022. Our vendor couldn't support that for a variety of reasons. So we're aiming for a 1/1/23 transition. I need to double check. I don't know if Cassie's on the phone yet, but I need to double check whether that plan year transition, because it will involve a plan document amendment, will need to come to the board. I have a feeling that it does.
Art, I am here.
Oh, hi, Cassie.
Hey, yes, you're right. That change is going to have to be documented all the way through the trust agreement. It's going to have to go to the board and then the council.
So we'll be up the board at some point next calendar year. And that leads me to my next topic, which is the city is transitioning from our ERP system from CGI to Workday, and so we're that includes the open enrollment benefits module with Workday. So we're working toward that. We're endeavoring to go live on 7/1. So the plan will be to remain with Conduent up until that point. And we've negotiated an extension on that agreement through 12/31/2022, which will allow for a successful transition to Workday in July. And then as soon as we go live with Workday, we'll begin planning for the plan year transition in January of 2023, which seems like a long way away, but it feels like next month, to be honest with you. The next update that I wanted to provide is on a vaccine mandate. You guys may have seen in the paper or read in the paper or in the news that the city is pursuing a surcharge for those city employees that remain unvaccinated through the health of the self-insured program. Would need to be tied to a wellness program. There haven't been any definitive decisions made around this, but me and my staff have done a fair amount of work with Mark and Erica and Cassie related to what can and cannot be done through the Affordable Care Act and the HIPAA Act. And we have provided Jeff with there's an affordability calculation with each one of those guidelines that the city must abide by. And we've provided him with those calculations. And as of late last week, there were serious discussions about whether or not we would begin to move forward with a surcharge on those city employees that remain unvaccinated. I don't have any more information today, but I did want to inform the board that is a reality that could take effect as early as January 1. I don't anticipate that requires the need for an open enrollment, and the parameters around that are still being discussed at the executive level, but I wanted to at least alert the board that is the path that we're moving down. Conduent has alerted us that they could support that with the understanding that decisions are made promptly, and so you know we continue to work on that with our consultants and our legal counsel and our medical partner Cigna. So I'll pause there. I don't know if Jeff Yates has any additional information to add there, but I wanted to just there's been a lot going on. That I wanted to make sure the board was briefed on at a high level. And I'll entertain any questions that the board has related to that.
So before we take questions, the mayor and council and the manager haven't finalized any activities, but the manager's leaning strongly towards some kind of health incentive program or health program related to vaccinations and other issues, smoking cessation, that kind of thing. So there will be probably more on this. It's an evolving issue, and we've been looking at it and talking through it constantly. So that's about all I have to add, but I think there will be something. I just don't know what that'll be at this point. Are there any questions related to that or any questions for Art? Okay, I think that was the last item on our agenda, except for future items. Is there any items anyone would like to add to future agendas? Art, I would like to add to a future in the near future. Let's talk about a clinic and kind of walk through the thinking as the city's been considering that and looking at a way to help curb cost in doing that.
Can I ask for clarification on mental health clinic or a on-site?
If you want to do, you can do both. We can talk about mental health clinic. That's a little different, but I don't mind bringing everyone up to speed on that. That's funded with ARPA dollars at this point. So we can talk about that, but also the health clinic with the goal of curbing usage and increasing wellness. So I'm helping to kind of offset that cost with some fixed cost approach. So.
Yes, sir. We can discuss that actually in December would be a good time, because I'll have more information on the mental health clinic at that point as well.
Sure. Okay. That's all I have. Does anybody have anything else they'd like to add? All right, hearing none, we'll go on. Our last item is adjournment. Do I need a motion or can I just adjourn?
I prefer a motion and a second.
Can I get a motion and a second, please?
This is Matt, so moved.
Sorry, I was on mute, I'll second it.
All right, I have a motion and a second. All in favor, say aye.
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 All right, we'll be staying adjourned until our next meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank
Good
you.
Job.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone.
Take care. Bye.